Welcome to episode 4 of the Original 11, the official podcast of Princeton football. On today's show, we will have Mike Wagner coming off a big 2-sack effort in the 45-10 victory over Columbia Friday night. Big win for the Tigers on ESPNU, their opening game in the Ivy League season. Princeton will take a one-week break in Ivy play, play Lehigh this Saturday, and then go back into that six-week sprint towards the Ivy title. We'll get to Mike Wagner in a bit, but first let's look back on Friday night's game with Cody Kruschel, who I had the privilege to share the booth with in what was, you know, middle of the second quarter, a seemingly pretty interesting game. You know, Columbia had kind of cut the deficit to 13-10, had stopped Princeton for the first time, and, you know, it seemed like things were about to get interesting, and I thought that that was a really telling sign that Princeton handled that moment in dominant fashion.
Yeah, I mean, it was all of a sudden a one-score game. Columbia had the ball. They were driving. They had momentum. It was a pretty good crowd on a Friday night for a nationally televised game. So you got the feeling, okay, this isn't going to be like the last few trips to Wien Stadium. Columbia's going to stick around and fight. And then, I mean, you did the math on it. What was 25 points over 6 minutes and change, and then all of a sudden it's a rout.
It was impressive because, you know, a few of the previous scores the teams had, big kickoff return, big run early against Monmouth. Columbia had the best sustained drive against Princeton to score that touchdown that we'd probably seen all season, and then they come up with a three and out. And it was good. I thought it was a good moment to get to see kind of how Princeton would handle the adversity. The defense, as it's done pretty much all season, got a quick stop. I believe it was a third and short they made the stop. And then from there, John Lovett and this offense took over. And really, you know, Columbia came into this game with a pretty highly rated run defense. And 360 yards on 41 carries. I'm guessing the Lions dropped down the charts there.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this game, so, you know, 13-10, Princeton has to punt it away. Columbia gets the ball back at their own 35, and then the Tigers, you mentioned, 3rd-and-1 stop, and then Columbia committing a penalty, so they have to punt it away. What do you want your offense to do then? You want a sustained drive. So they go out there, they run 11 plays, 80 yards. John Lovett rushes in after his initial rushing touchdown was overturned on review. Defense comes out, 3-and-out. Offense comes back out there. What does the offense do? They score again. So it's okay. You mentioned it on air. It's the first time this year that the defense had pressure. They stepped up, and then the offense did exactly what you needed them to do. And this was a strange game because when it was 13-10, even, you know, midway through the second quarter, you looked at the box score, and I think Jesper Horsted had 2 catches. Charlie Volker hadn't touched the football yet. John Lovett passing was around 45%. All of a sudden, 25 points in 6 minutes, and it's turned into a blowout. So, really, the first time the Tigers had faced any adversity, it's an Ivy League game and it's on the road. So there's a lot to like out of that first half, even though Columbia did make it a little bit closer than they would have liked.
If I'm an opposing defensive coordinator the rest of the season, I'm getting a real headache watching that game because you saw, look, everybody knows what John Lovett did in 2016. He's the Ivy League Offensive Player of the Year. But then you watch the first 2 weeks and you're seeing John Lovett having a lot of success throwing the ball. And okay, they moved the pocket around a little bit. He broke a couple runs, but they didn't really use Lovett as a major asset in the run game. Columbia, 17 carries, 174 yards, 2 touchdowns. They would run that read option. He kept, you know, linebackers are going with Volker, going with Edie. He's keeping, but he's not keeping for 3 yards. He's keeping for 20. Or, you know, the touchdown was a long run. It's another aspect of this offense now that defenses are going to have to watch. Like Al Bagnoli, after the game, compared it to, you know, arguably the best offense he's seen in 20-some years of coaching in the Ivy League, and he's not one to just kind of dish out compliments left and right. This is a scary unit, and nobody had seen John Lovett, the full-time runner, yet.
The really impressive thing about that was, and we talked about this on the ride home, where you're looking at John Lovett, and you're thinking, okay, early in the game, they were biting on that read option. And there was one play where I think John Lovett had the football going right. There were three guys draped on Colin Edie going left. Columbia made adjustments. If you look at it, really after the first quarter, they did a better job of not biting on that read option. Still couldn't stop it. And this is a veteran defense. This is an experienced defense. This is a defense that had played really well the first couple of weeks of the season. Even when they made the right adjustments, they still had no answer for John Lovett, which has to be encouraging if you're Princeton, not so much if you're anybody left on Princeton's schedule.
Right. Week one, Steve Carlson, one catch. You know, last Friday, Jesper Horsted, only two catches. You know, we've seen games now where, you know, Colin Edie didn't do much against Monmouth. It's not like every phase of the offense has, you know, clicked completely every game. But enough have that they have blown teams out. And frankly, I don't know how many total points they've scored in fourth quarters this year, but it's not many. They haven't had to.
No, and you know, there's still some bullets in the chamber. They haven't. Graham Adamitis hasn't caught a pass. They haven't really utilized Cody Smith out of the backfield as a receiver. Jacob Bermelin, they've been high on him. His career high in catches so far, I think, is two this past Saturday at Columbia. There's still weapons out there that are underutilized, and you have to imagine that's not going to be the case the entire season. This is a team that still hasn't really hit its apex.
Yeah, and when you mention the two guys, Adamitis and Smith, you know, them in the pass game is one thing, but I think you have to appreciate the level of blocking that those two have put forth, along with the offensive line, but they are giving either Lovett or the running back incredible amounts of room to run, and then the blocking for the passing game has just been spot on. And again, we've talked about the offensive line returners in Radosevich and Ati, and then the new guys, how well they've played. But you know, I think it's a good point that you make. Adamitis and Cody Smith, they're going to have an impact in the pass game, but it doesn't mean that they haven't been big impacts in this offense yet. It's just everyone has filled their role, and it's basically the same way. When you look at the defense, it's not, you know, TJ Floyd had the two interceptions. Mike Wagner had the two sacks. I thought it was the first time that you had a defensive performance where you actually look at the stat sheet and you say, oh, that is an individually good game. Really, what it's been for 3 weeks is everybody doing their part, and it's been dominant.
And that wasn't the case last year. You look at it last year, especially after a bunch of starters went down on defense. If it's week 7, week 8, week 9, week 10, you're watching the game and you have a pretty good handle. You know, I don't know exactly how many tackles Tom Johnson has, but I know it's double digits.
It's a lot.
And this year, I think all three games, it's been, you know, middle of the third quarter, and I actually have to pull up the box score and look at, I had no idea who the leading tackler was, and it's, okay, it might be Tom Johnson with 7, and Mark Fassati with 6, and Ben Ellis with 6, and James Johnson with 5. It really is a team effort. There's nobody outside of TJ Floyd but those big interceptions that's really stood out, but that's a good thing. And we talked about it too. You know, there's depth. You know, at middle linebacker with James Johnson behind Tom Johnson, you get the feeling that James Johnson can handle that position, and at that rush linebacker spot, you know, you get the feeling that some of these underclassmen who have played a lot in these blowouts, if you were to put them in there for Mike Wagner today, it's not going to be that much of a drop-off, and that's something that was missing last year. You had a lot of talent, you just didn't have that depth, and we've seen talent and depth over the first 3 weeks on defense.
Yeah, I mean, and Wagner talks about the play of his understudy, Matthew Jester, in the interview coming up, but, you know, it has been a big impact. And again, you know, if you can't just look at the stats to understand the impact. You look at a guy like Jeremiah Tyler, who has started that strong side position. It's a position that historically doesn't get a lot of stats. You know, Quincy Wolfe started all 10 games. He didn't have a ton of tackles, but he made an impact. Jeremiah Tyler brings something completely different. He blows up passing lanes. He pressures quarterbacks. He forces them to throw early. You know, he may end the season with somewhere in the 20 to 30 tackle range. You know, I still think at some point he's picking something and going. But, you know, it's
he almost did it against Butler.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just the combined impact. And look, at some point, again, this team's going to be tested later in a game. I'm pretty sure, you know, whether it's this week, next week, or beyond. But, you know, again, if this defense can stay healthy moving forward, I haven't seen an offensive line that has been able to give a quarterback enough time to really maybe challenge, a defensive backfield that is more experienced than last year, but still you're sending out a bunch of underclassmen corners.
And again, it's not just one guy. The Tigers threw three games, 11 sacks as a team. 9 different players have chipped in with at least half a sack. So it's not like, okay, we have this stud defensive end. Like, if you're the Princeton, if you're the Tigers and you're game planning as an offensive coordinator, you can kind of circle, okay, this guy and this guy are the ones that we really need to keep an eye on. You can't do that with the Princeton defense. It's been a team effort.
If we're going to nitpick, and look, you got 7 weeks, you need to get better. Special teams is an area that hurt Princeton against Columbia. They gave up the long kick return. I haven't had a whole lot of in their own kick return game. Punting, George Triplett has been fine so far, but I know that they've seen better from him in the preseason. They had the blocked extra point earlier in the year. These are little things that, look, Bob Cerese is, and this is most head coaches, though, they are special teams guys. They understand that the little margins in special teams that sometimes make the difference. So I wouldn't be surprised if if there's a lot of special teams talk this week. Bob Cerese was talking about it post-game last week.
Yeah, I mean, a 95-yard kick return in a game that you win by 35 doesn't seem like a big deal, but giving that up in a closer game later in the year, you better believe against teams like Yale and Harvard and Dartmouth with what they've been doing, you're going to play some tough games in Ivy League play, and if your punter can get you 8 or 10 extra yards, and if you can stop him on the kick return at the 15 instead of the 25 or the 30, those are all things that are going to become more apparent once we get into some tighter games.
I know you'll have a lot more on the Lehigh game Thursday night on the Bob Cerese show, but
a lot more on special teams, too.
Absolutely. You'll have some of them, so you can ask them yourself. But, a real quick look at Saturday. You look at some of Lehigh's results so far. 1-3 is not maybe what you'd expect of a Lehigh team, but a couple things. They play a loaded schedule, which including the likes of Navy and Villanova, and their star running back, Dominic Bragg alone, suffered an injury earlier in the season. We have seen him, front and center, an All-America running back. You're going to get his best on Saturday. So I don't think you can necessarily look at Lehigh's record and have a true sense of what you're going to get, especially if Bragg alone is 100%. They had a bye week this past week, so I think you're going to get a little better test offensively, and clearly for a run defense that ranks, among the top 10 nationally, this will be their biggest test.
Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest test. There's not a running back in the nation at the FCS level better than Dominic Bragg alone, and I would bet there's probably not a ton of running backs at the FBS level that are better than Dominic Bragg alone. This is a guy who's the active career rushing yards leader at the FCS level. He's a 3-time first-team All-Patriot League. He's an All-American, and it's a team that's been tested. You mentioned it, on the road at Navy. You can make an argument that their weakest opponent is Penn, and Penn's a team that's picked near the top of the Ivy League. So, this is a Lehigh team. They're well-coached. They're experienced. It's going to kind of be a dogfight when they come in here.
One of the guys who will be in charge of keeping Bragg alone in front of him and then obviously thwarting the Lehigh passing attack will be the senior defensive lineman, Mike Wagner. You remember he was leading the nation, last year in sacks before a season-ending injury against Brown. And Friday night, he showed all of that and more in a really dominant performance. Let's hear from him right now. Mike, I think it'll surprise people to, who maybe haven't followed as closely to find out that somebody who led the nation in sacks last year and had a couple Friday night didn't necessarily come in as an accomplished rush linebacker. And even I was just talking to Coach before this interview, and he remembered that first practice where they called you in. What do you remember about that practice? An inside linebacker, a reserve like you, a triple-digit jersey, being called in to this new role and how quickly you clicked there.
I just remember they just needed extra guys because we had a lot of injured guys at that point in the year, and they didn't have a DN, so I went for middle linebacker and just got in a 3-point stance and played defensive end for a couple plays, and One of the plays Coach Therese happened to be watching, and I beat someone on a pass rush move, and he made the offense do it again and re-block it, and then I kind of did something else and won again. And then the next practice, I moved positions and was doing one-on-ones against the offense. And Coach, as Coach Furman has said a lot of times, he didn't even know my name before that. And Coach Therese kind of told him about what I had done, and he's like, "Who the hell is 107? I don't even know who that guy is." So it was funny, but it's kind of nice to get into a position where it kind of felt natural from, you know, the first snap. It was nothing I'd ever done before, but definitely felt a lot better than any other position that I'd played so far.
Do you know it immediately when a position just clicks? I mean, could you feel like at the end of that practice that maybe this really is where I belong?
Yeah, I definitely felt like that just because I was doing things I'd never done before, but I was kind of doing things that they had been teaching without actually being taught them, just from what I'd been watching in practice, and it felt a lot more smooth and natural than playing inside linebacker or playing, you know, tight end that I'd been kind of working on over the summer.
When you came into last season, you know, by that Brown game, you're leading the NCAA in sacks. And what did you, like, what was happening that you felt like, was it just kind of having that extra time to kind of learn the position and develop? I mean, did you feel coming into that year that that was the season you were bound to have? Or were you even a little surprised, like, man, I'm racking up sacks here?
I was a little surprised, definitely. I think it helped a lot having Kurt on the other side for those first four games, just because, you know, a lot of times with how good Kurt is, the offensive line is pretty much going to slide to him every play, and I'll get man protection, because if you end up trying to slide to my side, then you're leaving Kurt one-on-one, and that's probably much worse than leaving me one-on-one. So it was nice to have him and some other weapons on the defense that gave me the opportunities that I had. But yeah, I was definitely surprised. You know, I wasn't expecting to go in and have multi-sack games, but a lot of those games were kind of down to the end, so we were playing a full four quarters, and then the other team had to pass the ball a lot because our offense was so good. We were scoring so many points, they had to kind of air it out a lot and couldn't eat up the clock like some of the other games. So I think it was a lot of situational football that kind of gave me the opportunity.
You know, Jake gets hurt week one, Mark week three, you week five, Kurt week six, Joe and Matt week seven. Like, I'm sure it's bad enough when it's you're dealing with the injury, but like as it's going on, like how frustrating was it to just kind of see your whole position group get wiped out, and then the way those last three or four weeks played out, where offensively, yeah, you know, there were a lot of numbers, but there just weren't guys. Like, does it? I have to assume that A, it's incredibly frustrating on game day, but then it kind of adds a chip to the shoulder that seems like it was there for about 8 or 9 months afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the first couple, you're really frustrated, and it sucks to lose guys like that. But even by the end, it was kind of like unbelievable. Like, I remember when Joe went down, I didn't actually see it on the field, and someone told me that Percival went down, and I like couldn't even believe it, because I was like, oh my God, we just lost another D lineman. And it was kind of like that all season, and definitely unfortunate for the defense and for the offense. And something that, yeah, a lot of us have kind of taken into this year, and, you know, it makes it that much more meaningful when you know what it's like to kind of sit out and you only have, you know, one more year to play football. It definitely made us work hard in the off season, and we can focus every day in practice.
Now, I talked to Joe for a different story, and the one thing he said about the group is the focus on details and everything, the intensity, it's so in tune for this defensive line. And I think, you know, you've seen it over 3 weeks. Is this the defense you thought you could have coming into the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're getting there. I don't think that we're there yet. I think, you know, with any team, there's a lot of development that we still need to do and a lot of things that we need to work on. We're doing a lot of really good things in the games, but there's a lot of corrections that our coaches are making sure that we're doing each week. I think it's something that we need to develop throughout the year, but kind of the energy that we have and the focus that we have, especially while we're still having fun out in the practice field, because I think we focus on that a lot too, is enjoying ourselves, you know, because we don't want to come out to practice and not have fun. So we enjoy preparing, and our coaches make practice fun every day. And I think we're definitely on the way.
Your offense has guys that have these kind of huge numbers, and they're easy to notice and to get a lot of attention. Then you look at the defensive stats, and you know, really up until Friday night when TJ has the two picks and you have the two sacks, there wasn't even like a crazy standout game. It just everybody was doing their role. And what happens is the numbers are balanced kind of throughout the stat sheet. But you look at the other team and you know, nobody's scored over 10 points. You know, in your mind, is that what this defense in particular was supposed to be? That it's just kind of, especially without Kurt playing at this point, if everybody does the right thing, it'll all come together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, with some of the injuries we had last year, some of the guys had some higher stats, which, I mean, speaks to them as players. But I think this year with everyone back and healthy and how we're playing, I mean, yeah, if everyone's doing their job, is in their gap, then the tackles and then the interceptions and sacks are all going to be spread out among the team, which I think kind of speaks to our depth, too, because we're rotating in guys at linebacker. We're 2-3 deep at the linebacker. We're 2-3 deep at, you know, defensive back and on the D-line, and everyone's getting a lot of plays. I don't think a lot of the guys have played more than 40 snaps this year in a single game, which, I mean, last year we had guys playing 70, 80 snaps a game, and we're really fortunate this year to have the depth that we have and to have the caliber of players that we have so that everyone can contribute.
You know, it seems weird to say in a 45-10 game, but there was a moment middle of the second quarter where you know, they had scored on their previous drive and got the ball back and had the ball with a chance to go ahead. And it was the first time that it felt like there was any kind of actual adversity for your team beyond the first few minutes of the game. How good was it to get that test and then the way you responded and then kind of how much you built on that momentum in the second half?
Yeah, that was huge, especially because we didn't see anything really like that in the first two games, and you kind of need those situations to see who you're going to be as a team and as a program, and the way that we responded was awesome. There's definitely still some things that we can work on and things that we needed to do better throughout the rest of the game, even though we ended up winning by 35 points, but kind of having that first little, you know, struggle and seeing how we reacted was really good. And because we know, you know, with all these Ivy League games coming up, we're going to be tested. We're going to be in really close games pretty much every game the rest of the season. It's just how Ivy League play works.
You know, by the fourth quarter, you know, a number of the starters are out. You're up big. But you haven't given up a point in the second half. How intensely are you watching the backups, hoping that they can keep that streak alive?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we definitely love kind of holding them to 10 points or less. That's one of our goals. And that's something we also pride ourselves in, is when we throw those twos and threes in there, is that they're still playing at the same level that we would be playing at, and there's no real, you know, let off when we're letting them in, because I mean, I think pretty sure Columbia kept their starters in pretty much all game, and our guys were playing, you know, playing at the same level that we've been playing at. They gave up less points than we did, actually, which is great to see, and it kind of shows how hard the whole team's working and not just, you know, the ones and the twos.
You have a freshman behind you in Matthew Jester who has sacks now, I think, against Butler and Columbia. Yeah. And he's looked impressive in the time he's been out there. What do you see from him in practice?
He's great. He's one of those guys that's always kind of developing and learning and asking the older guys how to do this differently. And he'll come up to me asking me, you know, kind of specific techniques or part of our plays that you wouldn't really need to know in the game, but that are definitely helpful, that kind of come with experience. And he's just trying to learn and develop and contribute as much as he can as a freshman. I mean, and as you can see, it's working. He's doing great in games, and he's been great coming in on thirds downs for us, and he's playing real well.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Original 11. Saturday's game will be a 1 p.m. start at Princeton Stadium. You can watch it live on ESPN+, or listen to it on TuneIn or 103.3 FM WPRB. Remember, you can get every episode of The Original 11, as well as any other Princeton podcast, by subscribing to Princeton Tigers.